step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. At ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Welcome to 100% Hockey. John Shannon here. Darren Millard has the week off. Darren will be back in earnest next week. And by the way, next week on Wednesday, we will have the new Dallas head coach, Glenn Gulletson, as our guest. A guy who, after being a head coach twice, once in Dallas and obviously in Calgary, and after 8 years of being an assistant coach in Edmonton, deserves a chance to be another head coach, and he's going back to Dallas. So we'll talk to Glenn about that and about a few other things. That's next Wednesday on 100% Hockey. And by the way, we do have another show going on. It's called 100% Canucks with Landon Ferraro and me. We will have Connor Garland as a guest. That will be released this weekend at some point. That's 100% Canucks on Audio Boom, and the full episodes are on YouTube. So these are kind of starting to be the dog days of the hockey summer. Teams are finishing their prospect camps, their development camps. Other groups have decided to take some time off. And you have to wonder, all these predicted trades that were supposed to happen this summer, when are they going to start? What's going to happen? Obviously, there's lots of rumors going around. Erik Karlsson is a huge topic in Pittsburgh. We talked about Sydney not moving, but I think there's a reality that there's a chance that Erik Karlsson will not play for the Pittsburgh Penguins this year. We'll have to wait and see. This is day 3 and the final day of Alumni Week on 100% Hockey. Today, 4 guests, including 3 Stanley Cup champions. Ben Scrivens, who didn't win the Cup, but was an important player in Edmonton and in the Toronto organization for a while. Jeff Beukeboom, who won Stanley Cups in New York and in Edmonton. Matt Cook, who won a Stanley Cup in Pittsburgh. But first up, a Stanley Cup champion from the Edmonton Oilers and the Montreal Canadiens, the former executive director of the NHL Alumni Association, Mark Napier. He's up first on 100% Hockey.
This is 100% Hockey. John Shannon at the NHL Alumni Golf Tournament. Pleased to be joined by Stanley Cup champion, Mark Napier. Arian, why does that? That never gets old, does it?
Never gets old. Never. Just very fortunate to get to play some great teams. And yeah, they came in as Stanley Cup champion after. Stay that till 99.
It's on the Crimson in Edmonton this year, Mark. What did you think of, and what did you remember back to your days in the 80s with Glenn's team?
You know, that was so terrible. Obviously, they didn't have the tailgate parties or whatever they had outside the building, but it was a lot of the Western teams were very quiet, as you know, during regular season. But come playoff time, they really got rambunctious. And our Edmonton fans were one of the loudest in the league back then as well. Like, you know, you used to think Philly or Boston or Madison Square Gardens would be the rambunctious one. But come playoff time, our fans were fabulous.
It's almost because I was there a lot at that same time. And it's almost that the greatness of your hockey club, they just took for granted. I mean, every night, Will Wayne would get four, and you know, and Jari would score two, and somebody would, and Grant would make a great save, and you know, your line would do something a little special, and people say, oh yeah, that's the Oilers, yeah. But when it came to the push and shove of the playoffs, then they got emotionally involved
for sure, and I was pretty lucky the years I was there because the Winnipeg Jets were also in the mix. And you could almost argue they were the three of the four best teams in the league back then with Calgary Flames.
Right.
Calgary had to play Winnipeg. And then, first year won the Cup in '85, right. Played Winnipeg. I think Howard Chuck had broken ribs and they were pretty beat up. And we played Vancouver, who weren't that great at the time. The next year, Calgary did beat us in seven. And they went on, I think, Habs beat them. It was tough just to get out of our division.
What do you think of the game today in 2025?
Personally, I love it. I was smaller, bit of a skater, goal scorer. So, you know, the end of my career, I was eliminated with the whole thing that people were getting away with. And I almost got to neutralize a guy like me. But I just think the skill and the speed of the game is so much.
The other part of it for somebody who played it at such an elite level like you did is the depth of teams now is so much more amazing, isn't it?
For sure. And I guess with the salary cap and things like that, you really have to be careful how you spend. But the third and fourth line players are also darn good hockey players, you know, and fifth and sixth defensemen. And the goaltending's so much better than when I played. And no, nothing against Grant Fuhr or Ken Dryden, but
they were both okay.
They were both pretty good, yeah. Well, they didn't have the equipment the new kids have, but the nutrition and everything. They're just better athletes than we were.
Well, that's part of it. The new collective bargaining agreement. There's no fitness testing anymore going to be allowed because these guys are in shape all the time anyway. You would take a bit of a summer off, wouldn't you, when you played?
Oh yes, just about the whole summer. I think we used to kick it back up. I think I started July 1st. I'd start running, but we used to kind of use training camp as for fitness for us. And you know, back then the trainers used to tell you to have a couple of beers to rehydrate, you know, so and they didn't allow water on the bench because they thought it gave you cramps. And so I'm just so happy that, you know, it's amazing somebody didn't die, you know, but because I remember during some games I'd lose 10 or 12 pounds just through sweat.
Wow.
And never got the water back in or the hydration until after the game. So it's you know, it's nice. I think they're really protecting the players a lot better, which is great to see. And then they're, like I say, they're just in so much better shape.
So we are spending some time today at the NHL alumni golf event. This was something that was near and dear to your heart for a long period of time, not the golf event, but the alumni. And it seems to have now gained much more traction. And I say this respectfully, a lot more attention by the league and a lot more attention by the Players Association. And that must in your heart please you with the foundation you built for this group.
Well, it did. Yeah, I was there for 12 years. Before me, it was Brian Conacher for, I think, 3 years, and Rennie Robert before that. But Rennie did a great job getting off the ground. It wasn't easy because there wasn't a lot of help from, I think it was Bob Gooden at the time, and the league, I guess they were waiting to see what was going to happen. Then, you know, Brian came and did a good job. And I was lucky for a bit. Paul Kelly was in there, who really basically said cradle to grave, and Heels was part of that with Pat Flatley. And then, They obviously, everybody knows what happened when they got rid of Paul. And it kind of went back to the way it was when Don Fehr came in. So,
you know, so I was very proud because it wasn't easy to try and build what we built. And Glenn now has just taken it to the next level. He's just done a great job, and a lot of coordination or work with the league and also now with the Players Association. So I think the players are going to be really well taken care of here on
that. And the reality is that not every player coming out of the NHL is financially set, is mentally set, is medically set. And that's something that your group really tried to work hard on.
A lot of different factors, you know, one divorce, and also the widows, you know. So when a guy passes away, the NHL alumni takes care of the widows as well. So they're all part of the family. So, a lot of mental issues. A lot of guys have trouble transitioning out of the game. They don't want to deal with themselves. So there's a lot of different factors.
But at what point does the alumni help? I mean, what point? When do you step in, or how does that work from that perspective?
A lot of guys are,
because people are pretty private, are pretty private,
and pretty proud. They wouldn't. So you kind of hear through the grapevine if a guy had a drinking problem or a drug problem or whatever. And but as you know, until they're really ready to ask to get help, it's not going to be any good. So a lot of that was just working with that. Back when I was there, Dr. Shock, he was with current players. But, you know, that was a big part, right? The supplemental pension for the Johnny Bowers and Gordie Howes and Ted Lindsay of the world I was proud of, and Glenn's done a great job continuing that. And now he's trying to get health care for a lot of the players, which was a really tough one, but I guess step by step. But a lot of they do a lot of good things that never get to the media,
right?
Because players don't want it, and we respect their privacy. And Glenn's doing the same thing.
You still love the game?
I love it. Just love it. Just love
you
it.
Play?
You know what? I had my back operated on a couple of years ago, so I just skate with the grandkids now. Right. That's the extent of it. Yeah.
But you're not afraid of sitting watching on TV or going to games?
Just love it. Just love it. It's sad to say, I'd almost rather watch it on TV than go to the games. But come playoff time, if you can go to a live game, I love it. But
you have a favorite player?
Oh boy, I'd have to see Connor McDavid. I just
really,
being an ex-Oiler, just to watch him play is pretty special.
I don't think anybody understands how fast he is. Really, I mean, he just has another level, another speed.
Yeah, well, a lot of guys are fast, but they can't do the things with the puck that he can do at full speed.
Right,
you know. So it's just
And I'm not a skating expert, but everybody talks about his edge work and the fact that he can stop so quickly, and turn so quickly.
Oh, just amazing. And his compete level too, you know, like a lot of, you know, I played with Wayne Gretzky. He hated to lose, you know, and you see Connor, I don't know him personally, but
you can see
him play and he doesn't like losing either. Right. So when you got a leader like that, a guy like Napier, how can you not play your tail off if they're going to work that hard, you know?
And that really is lead by example stuff. With those guys like Connor or Crosby or even in your time in Montreal, right?
Yeah, you know, like, you know, Guy Lafleur, as much as they say he used to float around and stuff, but a lot of times he'd be there 2 hours before you'd be walking the rink and there'd be pucks banging off the glass and things like that. You know, and Bob Gainey was the more vocal one there. And then with the Oilers, Mark Messier was the more vocal. But still, the team captains from Cornway to Savard to Gainey, they all led by example as well.
You view yourself as an Oiler or a Canadian?
Oh,
I wasn't going to ask about Minnesota, but I could. But Oiler or Canadian, because that's where you won, right?
I won a cup there, 79 with the Habs and 85 with the Oilers. But I'm going to go 50-50, John. Can I gracefully walk away from that question?
Well, I'll come back to you when we have that Montreal-Edmonton Stanley Cup final.
Oh, I hope it goes seven games in overtime.
Mark Napier, thanks for this.
Thanks, John.
100% Hockey from the NHL Alumni Golf Tournament. Welcome back to 100% Hockey. John Shannon at the NHL Alumni Golf Tournament, joined by former Maple Leaf and former Edmonton Oiler, Ben Scrivens. Ben used to live in Edmonton. Tell us exactly what that was like during the Stanley Cup final.
Well, you know, we've been so fortunate as fans and as alumni to watch a phenomenal team now 2 years in a row. you know, it's heartbreaking to come so close and to try to break the Canadian Cup drought. But, talking to family and friends around, I mean, the city's buzzing every time the Oilers make the playoffs, and, the pictures and the audio from inside the rink, don't even do it justice. It's such an amazing place to watch playoff hockey.
How many Stu Skinner's questions do you get?
I get a fair amount. I get a lot of people who are, offering to be my agent, which I don't think they've seen me step on a scale. So, but no, honestly, like the goaltending in Edmonton,
it's not that bad, is it?
It's a hot topic, but you make the Stanley Cup final 2 years in a row. Stu Skinner is still young, right? Like that's the other thing we keep in mind. And Calvin Pickard did an amazing job this year. Drug them through the first round and halfway through the second. They've done a bang up job. Truly. It's hard. It's easy to be critical when you don't win at all. But they come one goal away last year. And then this year was another close one. So, I've got nothing but the utmost respect for those two guys.
I'm always amazed with Skinner. And you were kind of like this too, as a player. Morning skate, go in the dressing room, a horde of media there. Stu Skinner stands there and talks to everybody. There isn't one ounce of, I've got to stay focused. I'm going to do what I normally do. But I would suspect that his demeanor is one of his success stories.
For sure. Absolutely.
How do you manage that as a goaltender?
Well, I think it speaks to his level of maturity for how young he is. Actually, he's only a handful of years into his career. It took me longer to realize that like at the end of the day, nothing really matters before the game starts. That doesn't mean you don't prepare. It doesn't mean you don't have your routines. But maturity, a lot of time, is the experience of knowing what matters and what doesn't. And so for some guys, it seems that the way they need to do it is kind of put blinders on and almost be tunnel vision. But that also, in my opinion, can set you up for some failure, because if any of those things go wrong, it's my diatribe against superstitions, right? If you follow your superstitious patterns to the T, the best you'll ever get is neutral, right? You're never going to feel better because of it. But if anything goes wrong, you've set yourself mentally behind the eight ball. And I think, Stu has done just an amazing job of being pretty unflappable, right? Like he's had ups and downs, well-documented in his career and in the playoffs the last couple of years. And then, next game he's coming out and he's probably going to pitch a gem. So, again, a credit to his maturity at such a young age.
How did you learn to get rid of the superstitions?
Some of it was intuitive. And then trial and error, like trying stuff and it not working and like still, not showing up with the level of game that you expect, and realizing that, my energy and my focus is better spent in these areas that are influential in my preparation and in my game.
A lot's been made in the last few years about playing in Canada versus playing in the United States. You've seen it. You've lived it. Mm-hmm. Is it an accurate issue for a hockey player, or and more importantly, if it is, how do you deal with it?
It's interesting because it's a very personal question, I would say. I loved my time in Toronto. Probably no bigger microscope than the Toronto sports media landscape, especially as a hockey player. Comparable to the Yankees or the Lakers in these other sports, or the Cowboys in Dallas. But you hear guys talk often about wanting to play meaningful games, wanting to play in front of people that care. And so you have these big markets where you either have people that really care and are really invested, and with that comes notoriety, going out for dinner and you're going to get asked for autographs and you're going to have media and a spotlight and some criticism on you. But that often elevates guys who thrive in that, and the guys who don't thrive in it, who want to be under the radar, outside those microscopes, they tend to be the ones who opt for the Dallases, mm-hmm. and the Utahs and the Nashvilles of the league. So it's probably a very personal question from guy to guy, but Yeah, it's I always enjoyed my time in the big markets.
But even in the room, though, there would be discussion about what it was like to play in Canada versus the U.S.?
I don't know. I'm trying to think back. Most of the time, we're not necessarily having those existential conversations. Probably more so during the summer, during as it gets close to contract time and right. free agency and stuff like that. Or you're talking about specific markets, how great it is to play in Denver and what a fun city and blah, blah, blah.
Sure.
You know, those types of things, but less so that nationalistic kind of lens on it.
So what are you doing now?
I work for the NHL Alumni Association, part of the health and wellness team. It's a great way to keep myself engaged with the game. Try and give back to a game that gave me so much, and also try and help my fellow teammates in post-career life.
And in many ways, that's something that people, I think, don't really understand. Fans don't understand is that, you know, life goes on for all of you ex-athletes
mm-hmm.
after you retire.
Yeah.
And then you end up having, some people end up having the same struggles that the regular people do.
Absolutely. I mean, whether it's the sports industry, Hollywood's notorious for it. You know, we have the same mental health struggles, the same substance use issues, the same, you know, probably higher medical issues, certainly dental issues. So, we also have a reality that people assume that everybody playing the NHL has Leon Draisaitl money or Mitch Marner money. But that's not necessarily the case, especially, you know, we're here at the Alumni Association Golf Tournament and, you know, we respect our elders here, so I'm not going to label them with anything other than they preceded me
sure.
chronologically. But, you know, they played in a time where the salaries weren't what they are today. And so they're still our alumni. They're still part of who we consider family here. But, you know, there's guys who made $15,000 annually, you know, during their careers. And so they've had to have post-career, mm-hmm. post-hockey careers. And with that, you know, they're kind of back in with the general population, so to speak, and figuring out what life is like without that financial security that I think a lot of fans out there just assume that every former player has.
Well, it's good you're giving back. Thanks for that.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on. Appreciate it, John.
Ben Scrivens on 100% Hockey. John Shannon, 100% Hockey. Millard's off today at the NHL Alumni Golf Tournament, joined now by Stanley Cup champion Jeff Beukeboom, who a lot of us saw play a lot of big games in Edmonton. This is we're early in the show. We're theming a lot of stuff Edmonton because hey, they went to the final again, Jeff. And did it bring back any memories for you? I know it was a different arena, but it was still a same crazy fan base.
No, it was great, and I purposely got my tooth knocked out because I knew it was going to talk to John, and we talked about the good old days.
Well, I was joking before, but I can't get you a job on Shoresy. I'm sorry. I apologize. But
what am I doing here?
You can probably get your own job because, you know, they always need good players. They always need skaters.
Yeah.
What'd you make of what was going on with Edmonton?
Well, obviously, being a Canadian and, you know, this conspiracy theory that the Canadians haven't won in so long and they're stacked against them, that's irrelevant. You know, just being there the years I was there, being drafted by them and developed and then winning three cups there, you know, you're hoping for them. There's no doubt about it. You wish for the fan base and the ownership that, you know, there's still, I'm sure if I went back there, I don't go back there enough. There's enough people that I would know that are around the team. Like Kevin Lowe's still around the team a little bit,
yep.
But, you know, I remember a couple of years ago, we lost in the semis and I think they lost in the semis. And I said, would have been pretty neat to see us in the finals, the Rangers and Oilers, my two teams. So, but it was, you know, it's a shame they couldn't do it last year or this year, but that's why you play the games. Nothing's guaranteed.
You played a style of hockey that got your name on that trophy.
Mm-hmm.
It appears that the Florida Panthers have kind of been they've gone back to a style that you guys would be familiar with.
Well, so I'm in the scouting game, so I do amateur scouting, and your priorities is try to find guys like that. and they're harder and harder to find. The skill is usually there nowadays in today's hockey player, but it's that bite, it's that game seven mentality in the playoffs. It's harder and harder to find.
And, you know, the rules, and it's been a long time now, it's been 20 years now since the rules changed, and it allowed the little man to play in the regular season. But I'm not sure the little man has a place in the playoffs. There is a different, that no. You do have to think differently, don't you, in the playoffs?
Yeah, it's a different game. You look at Florida, they probably had, by anyone's standard, an underwhelming regular season, but they got in the playoffs. They got right. The dance, it fits into their plan. They're like, doing things, and you could play against McDavid, play against Dreisa. So it's, they have a nice mix of everything. And then obviously at the end of the day, the goalie is a nice big save for him.
At the end of the day, it's the goalie. Exactly. I mean, it's always the goalie.
It seems that way, doesn't it?
Well,
I remember my whole career, I played in front of Hall of Fame goalies.
Right.
Grant, our backup was Andy Moog. Other than Billy Ranford, but he won the Conn Smythe that year. And then I go to New York, and it was Mike Richter my whole time there.
Right.
So, when you have elite goaltending or above average goaltending in the league, you got a chance. And those guys have all won, and they all give us a chance to win in the playoffs.
Skill level now is, as a scout, skill level has never been better. Is that fair?
I think so. Yeah, I think it's.
Better. And why has that changed?
Well, I think nowadays it's a year round training, year round of preparing, year round skill development, and like you said, they all can stick in. They all can do the basics above average, or and especially the kids are getting drafted in jail. But like you said, you're trying to find that quality that separates them from the group. And whether it's a guy who's 6'5", is just coming into his own,
right?
Or a small guy who you think, like Brad Marchand, he's not a big guy, but he plays with heart and desire. So, and everything in between. So you're trying to, it's not about the skill, because usually you find the skill, but it's what separates them from their peers.
So in this day and age, what are you doing these days? Scouting for?
Rangers.
Still scouting for the Rangers?
Still scouting for the Rangers. Yeah. They haven't got rid of me yet.
Well, it's, and the ups and downs of what the Rangers have gone through, you don't have to feel on a daily basis, because you're just a scout, right?
Well, yeah, I'm a scout, but you feel it because people talk about it. They say, oh, your team struggling this year. And so, but we're pretty good the last two.
Yeah.
So, when things don't go the way it's planned, there's changes, and we've made a lot of changes, and I think we've made changes in the right direction. But got a new coach, new staff, a bunch of new players. We still have arguably one of the best goalies in the game. When Adam Fox is on his game, we think he's an Norris Trophy candidate. So we think we have the pieces, and we think we changes that are going to get to that next level again, but you have to play the game first.
And a guy like Gavrikov coming in,
I think
in the end, people would be talking about his acquisition more than anybody else's on free agent day, maybe other than Mitch Marner, because of who Mitch Marner is.
Sure.
But Gavrikov, for the dollar, what a steal.
Yeah, and you look at the deal we made as soon as we signed him
to get rid of Keandre
and for less money,
right?
And the assets we got back, so. Yeah, it's about asset management, from a management point of view, but also it's about what we think are to be better.
Well, good luck.
Okay, thanks, John.
Thanks for this, Jeff. Appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure.
Jeff Bookaboom on 100% Hockey. Welcome back to 100% Hockey. John Shannon at the National Hockey League Alumni Association. Joined now by Matt Cook, who had a really good Stanley Cup champion career. I don't want to talk about that. I want to talk about coaching East Coast League Hockey in St. John's, Newfoundland. What was that like?
I love John's beautiful place. Phenomenal people are even better. I had an amazing time.
And unfortunately, you actually could have coached there longer, but the team folded more than I think,
a little bit out of slap shot.
Right. Yeah, what?
Straight out of it.
Seriously.
Six games left in the season, you could find out you don't have time left.
And you had already played Terry Ryan by that point, hadn't you?
I had.
What was that like?
probably the most chaotic 48 hours of my life. I think we had 9 players that were healthy to skate. Adam Party and I were deciding if he was going to play or if I was going to play. And, you know, we came to the, you know, decision that Terry skates 5 days a week, maybe he should play. And then the parent club wasn't super happy, but it ended in a really great story. It probably was, you know, for 48 hours was the story of baseball.
That was the amazing part. It you guys created some traction. Obviously, Terry's a bit of a celebrity in his own right. And I mean, the amount of coverage you got about that, what really did you hoped it changed a few things?
Yeah. I mean, Terry, I mean, he played the game the right way. And one of his friends got hit and his helmet was off and he happened to be on the ice. So he went and got in a fight and didn't get hurt. Thank God. But his interview, he nailed it. I mean, he got asked one question. I think he talked for 13 minutes straight. And Terry was Terry, but it was beautiful. His daughter got to see him play professionally, which she'd never been able to do. And so just a really cool story.
You like coaching?
I love it.
And so what's next?
You might find out in a few days.
Oh. Oh, come on. We need a hint.
Yeah, no hints. No hints.
So let's talk about your career. You were one of the feistiest guys to ever play the game.
Apparently. I mean.
You didn't see that?
I mean, I was tactical about, you know, making sure there was an element of physicality. But, you know, obviously you hate to see people get hurt.
Right.
But at the end of the day, I was taught to play the game. It's you versus him and survival of the fittest, right? So. I played junior hockey. I was the scorer.
Right.
But Mr. Keenan decided that wasn't going to be my role. And so, you know, I either have the option to adapt and find a way to be successful in the NHL or go ride a bus for 3-3s in the minors.
Right.
That was the option.
And you must have enjoyed watching Florida play the Stanley Cup final.
I mean, I love how Mr. Bennett has evolved his game. Super cool to see him win the Conn Smythe, but I think even more than that, the way that he's learned how to bring an element of physicality, an element of like having an effect on the opponent, whether that's mental or physical, whatever that is, I just think that still is a part of our game and will always be if you can do it the right way. Now, a little bit of how I played, you can't play like that anymore. The game is too fast. It's too risky. And I coach the game very differently.
You do well.
Yeah, I do. I coach for possession.
So looking back at that 2009 team you played on, you look at the roster, holy smokes, Matt. I mean, the Hall of Famers, future Hall of Famers. When you think about Marc-Andre Fleury just retired, the memories of 2009 Pittsburgh Penguins must have been special.
That team's still close.
Is that right?
There's a core group of guys that were there. You know, whatever, 5, 6, 7, 8 years, and still super close. So, and it's like you never left one another when we get together. So it's just a tight knit group that, you know, had inclusion the whole way. The logo on the front was first, and the team had experienced losing the year before
right.
to Detroit. And so, I think that cool how it all, but super intense place, right? Change on a run. Finish the season on a high end, we can play for 2 months. You'd save in game 7, second, that wins us the game.
So, you watch it now, you still see the same Sid, or do you see a guy that changed his way of playing in order to adapt to 2025?
I mean, he's changed, but he's him. You know, he's a beast in the corners. He still gets down. Like his game is to play below the circles. He's a straightforward player. He plays straight ahead. So it's really fun for me because he has evolved. He's evolved as, you know, some of it is. I don't even want to say aging because he's still a point per game guy. It's just amazing to see the level of efficiency that he plays with. And then he knows what he can get away with and what he can't.
What amazes me with Crosby, I don't think he gets enough credit for the defensive side of the game.
There's a story.
Okay. We have time.
Obviously, we won in 09. Didn't win. We are a group that changed. Right? Didn't win. Should have won 2 or 3. That's That's how good our team. And I was not playing anymore in 2016. And there's a game against the Washington Capitals at the end of the season. And he back checks, steals a puck. It goes back to the Caps. He blocks a shot. And then he dives and gets it out to Gensel and gets it out, goes down and scores. I text him. I said, "Where's Gensel here?" He's like, "What?" I said, "Everyone else has to follow." And it's when I really saw a huge change, you know, the decisions that he was making defensively, which then led to, you know, now I'm going to pull the rope from out front.
Do you ever see him playing for a team other than Pittsburgh?
I don't want to. I truly don't.
Right.
You know,
I don't think he does either. But
I know that, like, when I was in Vancouver in the 80s, like, I'd go somewhere else.
Right.
And you do go somewhere else, and then you feel like, maybe I shouldn't have left. Now, Pittsburgh was a great fit for me, and I didn't leave Pittsburgh. So it's just one of those things. Like, I hope that he's able to finish out his career successfully with Pittsburgh.
I've asked a few guys this question, and you've played in both countries. How different is it, Canada versus playing for Vancouver and then playing in Pittsburgh? Pittsburgh's a good hockey town, but they're not as crazed as the Vancouver fans.
It's just different. Like, honestly, like in Pittsburgh, we were blessed with the Steel Curtain had basically set a standard in that city that, like, we're here and we're yours, but when we also deserve our own time. And so that city is, they're diehard fans in all three sports, but they're also super respectful. Mm-hmm. You know, Vancouver, they're just so passionate. Like, they just, it's, you know, they live and die on every, you know, every play. Like, I've gone out there a lot, and, you know, there'll be people that brought up the game set when I scored against Calgary. Joe Vogt's going nuts in the penalty box. Like, you know, everyone remembers that still, and they talk about it all the time. So it's just a real hockey crazed market that is super passionate. And so there is a different feeling. And it's, I see how some players that are mature would find it taxing, but I loved it. Like, you know, I grew going to the grocery store and talking to people about hockey, that didn't bother me.
Right.
And some people want to separate it, and I understand that need for space, but I loved Vancouver.
And no hint where, what bench you're going to be behind?
It's not professional.
Okay. Anyway, there you go. It's soon to be behind another bench, Matt Cook on 100% Hockey. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
Pleasure. Yeah.
The Matt Cook story, I probably didn't get into enough detail about Matt Cook and coaching in the East Coast Hockey League. He was the head coach of the Newfoundland Growlers, which was a Toronto team in their system there in the East Coast League. They were short so many players at one point that they had to find at least one more player to play the game. And as we talked about with Matt, it ended up being Terry Ryan, who I think is probably more famous now for what he's done away from the game, in the book writing he's done and the storytelling he's given on all sorts of media. And it was a fascinating night to hear that Terry Ryan returned to the Growlers, played the game, got in a fight, as Matt discussed, I think the most important thing was his family got to see him play one last professional game. Matt Cook, by the way, is probably in line to become a head coach. He didn't want to really give out any information, but what I can tell you that he's been told many times that if you want to be a head coach at major sports levels, whether it's the East Coast League, the American League, or the National Hockey League, you're going to have to find a way to improve your skills. And so I wouldn't be surprised to see Matt Cook's name come up very soon as a head coach in Canada at some point, whether it be in junior hockey, whether it's be in the provincial junior leagues or the CHL. We'll stay tuned for that. Anyway, it was a great week with the alumni and what Glenn Healy's done, and on the heels of the ratification of the collective bargaining agreement, some really good news that both the league and the Players Association are going to help the alumni with emergency medical plans for worth more than $4 million US a year, $6 million Canadian. Great news for Glenn Healy and his group. Thanks for listening or watching 100% Hockey this week, Alumni Week. back to regularly scheduled programming next week. Talk to you then.
Riley Herbst from 2311 Racing here. And you know what grinds my gears? Waiting for coffee. But instead of counting frappes and lattes, I fire up Chumba Casino. No apps, no fuss, just fun social casino games to pass the time. By the time my coffee's ready,
order for Riley.
I've already taken a few victory laps. Next time you're stuck waiting, make it entertaining. Play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.